Okay, let's get started. Thank you for joining. It's almost 5 o'clock. I see a good group of people here, good number. So you must all be diehard monitoring fans. So thank you. We are as well. We love you. We're very passionate about this topic. Today's session is a breadth session. We're going to cover a broad set of capabilities around monitoring. It's going to be very demo-rich. Most of the session is going to be demos. And as we show a broad set of capabilities spanning monitoring all the way from applications to infrastructure, we'll also touch upon how we integrate monitoring into the different parts of the DevOps pipeline, the various tools we have. But it's mostly about going to be about monitoring. Let's start with the DevOps. What's the connection to DevOps? What do we mean by that, at least? DevOps is all about reducing the cycle time, so you can deliver value to your customers faster and faster. And as you do that, you want to be able to find and fix issues quickly. You want to fail fast. And monitoring can play an important role to help you with that. So the essential pieces of DevOps pipeline are, you know, agile planning. If you look at pieces like parts like continuous integration, continuous deployment, and of course, once you deploy your app, how to monitor it and keep it up. Keep it healthy, right? So even if you look at the various pieces, continuous integration, as developers do, as you're building and testing your code in your own environment, you want to be able to find exceptions right away and use telemetry, application telemetry, to find these and fix these as you're doing that. As you do your continuous integration, as you're running your tests or doing load tests, you want to be able to find performance issues and exceptions. Use your telemetry to find those early. And as you do your continuous deployment in your release pipeline, you want to be able to integrate monitoring right there. So as soon as you deploy, you want to make sure your new release is at least as good as your last release, right? And of course, in planning, as you plan your next cycle, you want to factor in all the learnings. You might have run many experiments. What are the results of those experiments? Are those hypotheses validated? And you want to use that validated learning to inform what are the things you prioritize into the next phase of your release cycle. So monitoring is important and interesting, is relevant in all these different phases. And we've integrated our monitoring tools into the various DevOps tooling, so to speak. For example, in Visual Studio, we've integrated our monitoring application insights right into through CodeLens. So as you're working through your code, working on your different methods, classes, you can see the failures right there that's coming from your deployed application. As you're doing your cloud test, we've integrated monitoring so you can get the data from your performance failures, issues, failure exceptions, right there. As you do your load testing, you can integrate monitoring right there so you catch your performance issues. So for example, one of the features we just announced at Build was doing on-demand profiling. So when you kick off your load test, you can turn on the profiler. Previously, it was in set intervals, so now we're given more flexibility. So you can turn on the profiler, and as the tests pass or fail, you can get the profiling information so to go help you go debug that and solve the problem right away. And as you look at your release pipeline, we integrated monitoring so that in your DevOps pipeline, you can add additional gates to make sure, put additional checks to make sure your deployed app actually works supporting the right experience for your customers. And there are many other touch points with DevOps. We added work item integration. As you find issues, you can assign things to the right people to work on, or it could be something you want to use for planning your next cycle. So basically, we look at monitoring, not on its own, but the various aspects of your DevOps, different phases, and how can we integrate with all the different tooling to bring you the right information so you can make the right decisions. So in this session, you'll get a broad view into the end-to-end monitoring, all the way from app to infrastructure. How to diagnose issues, how to relate customer experience issues issues that customer may be experiencing due to issues in your app, and which are the ones to prioritize and go fix. So you'll get a broad view across all of those, so you can actually look at your KPIs and drive your KPIs in the right direction. Right? When I say monitoring, what do we mean by monitoring? It's kind of a word that has different meanings. In the industry itself, there is a lot of debate around what is monitoring versus observability. You might have heard following this. But what really the crux of the issue is, by observability, people are meaning, you know, monitoring is a very narrow view. We want to get a broad view of the your application in the entire environment, how it's doing, being able to find and fix issues, being able to do rich analytics so you can continuously improve over time. All of those pieces are what the observability is. Now, when I mean monitoring, I mean it in the broader sense. So what are those pieces? First is visibility. Right, that's the most basic thing. You want to be able to get a real-time view of the health of your app, your SLAs, your KPIs. You want to be able to be notified when something goes wrong, which is the basic alerting. And being able to also have a view, outside-in view of how your app is doing. That's as close to how customers are experiencing that. So that's the basic part, visibility. The next part is being able to find and fix issues, being able to do deep diagnostics. When something is wrong, you want to be able to go deep and look at all the different pieces of your app, find the issues, and go fix them. Right? For that, we have many capabilities, such as the composite app map, application map, service map, that gives you a broad view of your entire environment, really pinpoints where the issues are, your hotspots, and really draws you to the attention to where the issues are, and you can go find and fix them. Distributed transaction tracing is another good example of a capability that helps you get a broad view. When you have a distributed app that consists of many different pieces, being able to trace a transaction across all those different pieces and knowing where the problems are, it can be very, very useful, especially when you build your apps with microservices where there could be lots of moving parts. Or sometimes you just have to dig in through the data, right? All these different pieces, there's no obvious answer. But they all produce lots of data, log data, trace data, and exceptions. Being able to correlate and really doing the analytics to get to the root cause maybe is very, very useful. And once you find an issue, you want to be able to take action, right? Automate as much as possible, either notifying someone, the right person, to go fix it, or even better, remediate it automatically. So that's another important aspect. The last, it's not about just keeping things up and running, reacting to issues tactically, finding and fixing things quickly. It's also how do you improve things over time, right? How do you optimize? This is where the build, measure, learn cycle can be very, very important. And you can bring in data from monitoring, compare release to release, look at questions like, are we improving release to release? Are we focusing on the right set of things? If we fix this issue, for example, if we make this transaction or this component faster, is it actually going to drive my KPI that I really care about? And to what extent do I need to optimize? Right? Being able to look at things more strategically and getting helping you get the answers so you can make the right decisions is also an important aspect of monitoring. So when you look at monitoring, it's got to look at all these different aspects and providing a comprehensive end-to-end solution is really key. Now, what do we have to offer here? We have a broad range of capabilities in Azure Monitoring. At the base level are what's the bottom layer, which is what the monitoring you get out of the box. This is any user just signing up for Azure, you sign up for a set of VMs or IaaS or PaaS services, you get a base level of monitoring capabilities for free, right? Just because you've used it, signed up. So these are the things like metrics, access to metrics, the right metrics that your services are emitting, dashboards, things like diagnostic logs, which you can push to your storage account, so you can go look at it, alerting, things like service health, action groups. These are all basic, the activity logs. These are all basic set of capabilities you just get out of the box, right, every user. And then you have, above that, a set of capabilities that are richer, more scenario-focused, which are Application Insights is a good example of that. This is about really monitoring your custom code, right? What's the health of that? your components that you've built. Log analytics, we've made a lot of investment in analytics, and I'll talk to that a little bit more later, which is bringing that rich analytics capability to look at all your data and being able to really mine that and get to the right root cause of issues. And service map, network monitoring, container. We announced a lot of capabilities for container monitoring today at Build, where we can give you a full view of your container environment and really manage the health and performance of that environment as it relates to your application. And there's more solutions here I haven't listed. But what I mean is we have a base level of capabilities, but we've also taken the approach of giving you a broad, full view, app to infra, across the app and infra, a broad range of capabilities. And what brings it all together is a common analytics platform, right? All the data goes into one platform, and we provide a rich set of views and curated views to help you get answers to common set of questions very quickly. But we also give you the full power of all the data in this analytics platform, so you can go get your own, do your own custom analytics. And for all the views we provide, we give you access to the same queries we use, so you can look at that and improve upon those, right? So because there's only so much we believe we can go, but giving you the full power is where you can take it to the next level and beyond. And all of these capabilities are supported by a common unified pricing model, one simple pricing model. We just announced in April, and you only pay for what you use. It's cloud-friendly, a single consistent pricing model across a broad range of capabilities that span from infrastructure monitoring to your application monitoring. I talked a little bit about analytics earlier, but monitoring is only when you need to manage your production environment, monitoring is only a part of that problem, right? It's an important piece which produces the data, but there are other key aspects like being able to do governance, backup, security is an important aspect, configuration, various types of operations you do. Now, all of these may not be done by one persona, or it may be done by different parts of your organization, people in different parts of your organization. But there's a lot of value to having all the data in one place, right? Because a security event is often, someone investigating a security issue wants to look at, what are all the operational issues in activities that happened, and being able to correlate that. And monitoring is, of course, an important aspect of that. The data telemetry coming from your application environment and infrastructure, and putting it all together is very, very useful. So we've taken the approach of we actually rebuilt most of our products around this one analytics platform. And we're going to continue investing in that space. And Evgeny will show demos of this, the value of actually having a common analytics platform. The many announcements we made at Build, we'll show all of these. We improved our alerting capabilities significantly. We've added support for metrics. We announced a lot of container monitoring capabilities. And also being able to do diagnostics across a distributed app. This is the end-to-end transaction diagnostics, application map that goes across distributed apps, more improvements around profiling, on-demand profiling, again, all driven by customer feedback, and easy enablement of the debugger and profiler capabilities, which we'll show as well. Before we go into the demos, a show of hands. How many of you have actually used Application Insights or Log Analytics to date? Okay, quite a few of you. Okay, good. How many of you are building apps on Azure today? Okay, good number. Great. So let's dive into the demos.
Cool. Thank you very much, Shiva. So let me just switch over to my machine here, number 7. Cool. So hopefully all of you have had a great morning waking up to a lovely sunshine day here in Seattle. I unfortunately woke up to this alert this morning, and I need to go and investigate what's going on. So let's do that together today. Now, before we keep going, I actually want to show you what we'll be investigating. Hopefully, all of you are familiar with Smart Hotels 360. If not, it's a public app that Microsoft put together to try and get you to sort of an easier ramp-up path to learning about all sorts of Azure technologies and hosting capabilities. If you go to GitHub, you can get the full source for the Smart Hotels thing. But I just wanted to deploy a smaller piece of it for the sake of today to have a much smaller surface area, which is kind of what's encompassed in the dashed lines there. Specifically, we'll have two tiers to our service that we'll be looking at. We'll have our front end, which is a public website, .NET Core, and it's hosted on App Services. We'll also have a big old Kubernetes cluster hosted on Azure Kubernetes Services, and that has a bunch of different microservices in it, including .NET Core, Node, Java. So all sorts of different platforms, but ultimately everything is hosted up in Azure. So let's switch over to Azure with that. By the way, this is the website, right? I can refresh it, it's live, this is my hosting environment. There's a little bit of weirdness here with the loading dots. We'll take a look at what's happening there, but generally, it seems to be up and running, no issue. So let's go into Azure. This is our Azure portal. Hopefully, all of you are familiar with it. And let's start investigating. So the very first thing that jumps to mind is this is a Kubernetes service. So let's actually take a look at Azure Kubernetes Services and see what's going on. So this is the one I'm hosting it on, SH360 demo. We'll just dive into that. And one of the things that you'll notice right away is that we bring monitor front and center. And you'll see this more and more in terms of Azure. So App Services exposes this, one-click enablement. Enabling it here in Azure Container Services is super simple. Azure Functions as well enables this. And you'll see this more and more. But you'll notice that we have a few options here for you, from viewing your Kubernetes dashboard to searching the logs, as Shiva talked about, that powerful data platform. But we'll actually just go into monitor container health. And this is the more curated experience, the visual one. So this is something that was released just a few weeks back. And hopefully, if you're using Azure Kubernetes Services, this is something that you're starting to play around with. But essentially, we can filter down to a particular namespace or service or time range. And we've got a few different pivots that we commonly examine in our hosting infrastructure, from the physical nodes on which this is hosted. In this case, this is a three-node cluster. And I can drill down into these, and I can see the individual containers as well as pods running on these clusters. And I can see, you know, all of the different metrics here. I can also switch to a container view. And these are just the raw containers together with the average whatever metric I'm looking at. In this case, this is the CPU usage in millicores. I can switch over to memory, the average here, the pod that this is running on, a trend, and of course, the view logs button here, which we'll drill into in a second. But let's switch into controllers. And one of the things that we often look at when we're examining a Kubernetes or container-based infrastructure is the number of restarts. Restarts are sort of very primitive, but very powerful way to tell right away that, hey, something might be wrong. So if we take a look at the table here, this container here, or this replica set, rather, with one container in it called tasks, it's restarted 67 times on me in the last 6 hours. And that doesn't sound too good. So let's try and figure out why that is and see if we can fix it. So over here, as I mentioned, there's this View Logs button. And if I press it, we'll be taken to the advanced analytics experience. Now, most of you raised your hands when Shiva asked you if you've ever used Application Insights. And hopefully, the advanced analytics portal is very much something familiar to you. This is the place where you can come in, where you can write queries and really get that deep insights into your data. Now, what we've done for build and what you'll be seeing more and more of soon across all of your services is that the portal now got pulled into the Azure portal, so that you don't have to open another tab and deal with all of that messiness. Everything's right here for you. It's a true drill-through experience. Now, we'll come back to this, and we'll actually write some more advanced queries and learn more about the query language. But for now, I just want to use the query that was generated for me. And you can see, even if you don't know the query language here, there's a few basic filters around the container name. That's the one I selected. There's the cluster name. Again, this is just basic stuff that the actual tool generated for me. I don't have to know the query language. But what I do need to know is how to read container logs, because ultimately, this is what we're looking at here. We're just looking at the SD out and the SD error logs coming off of these containers. So let's just scroll through this and see if there's any giveaways as to what might be going on, why we're having all of those restarts. And most of this so far looks a little just internal, application startup failed, so that's probably an indication as to what might be going on. Let's keep scrolling. It's recommending I use the debug setting. That's not too helpful. Getting better here and able to create initial connection pool. But this is really the giveaway here. There's a PostgreSQL exception that one of my passwords is misconfigured, which means that the service can't start because it probably can't connect and there's some retry logic going on. So let's actually try and fix this going back to DevOps. Let's actually go and fix the error. So over here, I have a shell terminal connected to a DevBox running Ubuntu up in the cloud, just a very small machine. So here's the actual code. And if we go and we take a look at, let's do that. And we'll just take a look at the config file that I use for these deployments. Now, again, this is just a very simple service. Of course, you wouldn't have your passwords in plain text like this. You'd use, you know, a key vault or something like that. And of course, I'm going to blow this environment away as soon as this demo is over. But I happen to know that this password here was mistyped. There's a zero there instead of an O. So let's go ahead and save that. And yes, we want to override it. And then I'll actually just deploy it right here because we can do that. I have a custom shell script here. Let's just give it my password. And now what we're going to be doing is actually connecting to Azure Kubernetes Services. We're going to be pushing all of our images up into the container registry again in Azure, doing all of that with a single little command line. So while that's happening, let's actually switch back and take a look at a few other things. And we'll come back to this to make sure that everything is working as expected. We mentioned alerts very briefly. So let's actually look at what alerts are in Azure, because we've put a lot of effort into these over the last few months, and we're going to keep improving over them. What I'll be showing you is a preview experience. This is something that you'll be seeing over the coming weeks and months. If you're interested in seeing this a little bit earlier and enrolling in the more private preview sort of thing, talk to us after the session and we'll be glad to enroll you. But previously, you just start with a flat list of alerts. Today, you come in and you actually see them grouped by category. So my severity zero ones here are out of control and I actually want to examine what's going on. So let's click through and see what's going on with these Sev zero alerts. We'll give it just a second. There's quite a few of them there. So one of the things that we did that a lot of you have been asking for is add a state to these alerts. You'll notice that for all of these, the state is new. But I can actually come through and modify it and say that this alert, we've examined it or it's closed, so that you can keep track. Now, this isn't meant to replace your full-blown ITSM solution. And we'll talk a little bit about how you integrate with that in a minute here. But this is meant to just be an initial indicator for you as you're looking through these. So we can see the alert history here. And if I modify the state, you'll be able to come back and see that there. And we've got all of the alert details. This is stuff that's, you know, relevant to you. I don't really know what that means. But one other thing here is we've got this blue bar that says there's these smart groups that we can try. So let's go ahead and click into that and see what happens. Essentially, what we're doing here is we're running some complex algorithms behind the scenes that try and cluster groups of alerts that happen together. So perhaps your network is always spiking up at the same time as your CPU, and both of those alerts are always firing together. We'll actually try to bring that information for you in a single view so that you can try and figure out in a more coherent manner what's going on. So here we can see that there's actually 337 alerts that belong to this one group that we can come in and then examine. So this is the alerts experience in browsing through them. But let's actually go ahead and create a new alert rule and see how we go about doing that. So we recently released a unified alerts experience. Hopefully, all of you have had the chance to play around with it. But if not, this experience brings together all of your different data types, from your activity logs to your logs against which you query in Log Analytics and Application Insights to metrics, all of that in a single place against all of your resources. So let's actually take a look at how we set this up. So it'll take just a second now to pull a list together of all of the different resources I have available to me. And then I can filter it down to a particular subscription and resource type. So let's actually switch to another subscription where I know I have some more interesting data. Specifically this, wrong one. We'll pick this baselining service one. And I want to take a look at my VMs. Now, when I select any one of these VMs, let's say Contoso VM1, and click Add Criteria, which is the actual criteria that we'll use to generate the alert, what you'll see is we have all of those different data types available here for you from a single view. So here's some metrics, and here's some activity logs. And if we had some actual logs, we would see those there as well. But for now, let's pick something super simple like percentage CPU. So what we'll do now is we'll actually go and grab the data for you. Here's what it looks like over 6 hours. Maybe we want to take a look at it over 24 hours. And of course, I can specify a static threshold. For example, 40% alert me anytime the CPU goes over that. Right? And there's 40%. We can see in retrospect when the alert would have fired. Cool. There's a few subtraction mechanisms here. That's all fine. Also recently released in public preview is this dynamic alert capability. This essentially goes back, looks at your historic data, and tries to figure out what a good baseline would be. So in this case, you can see it actually went back and it determined an upper and a lower bound for me. And I can select whether I want just an upper or a lower bound. And I can also pick the sensitivity. So this is some machine learning algorithms running behind the scenes. Now, this is very periodic data, and so it actually detects a periodicity to your pattern here. If you didn't have a particular periodicity or even sets of periodicities, it would just show you a flat line, upper and lower baseline. Let's maybe zoom in a little bit, just so that we can see what's going on. And so this is a great starting point for you. Now, of course, you still need to write some alerts that are very specific to your application and to your infrastructure. Ultimately, you're the subject matter expert, so you know sort of the conditions that are really, really bad for your application. But this can serve as a great first point of detection for everything that you do.
This is a feedback we used to get constantly. Hey, we don't know, especially as you deploy and your scale of your app increases, we don't know how to set the static thresholds. What are the right thresholds? We just don't know. And we always get it wrong. And we end up with a lot of noisy alerts. So right. Tell us what the right, you figure it out and tell us. Give us an option to just turn it on. And that's clearly outcome of what we heard from customers.
Yep, and so this is available already for some services. VMs is a good example, like I'm showing you here. And you'll see this rolling out across more and more different types of Azure resources. So let's press done. The next thing we'll want to do is give this alert rule a name and a description and a severity, very basic things. And then we get to define this notion of action groups. So let's say in your organization you have, an IT ops team, and then there's another networking team. And typically, you want to alert them on an individual basis. What you can do is actually come up with these action groups, and they're ARM resources, just like a VM or a storage account or anything else would be. Deploy them, and then anytime an alert needs to go to your network people, you can just refer to that network people action group. And let's take a look at the different type of actions that are available for you. Of course, you'll give this action group a name and a short name and the subscription because it is an ARM resource where you want to store it. But once you do, there is a bunch of different things that you can do with these alerts. So you can do basic things like email, SMS, push, voice. You can call an Azure function. You can call a Logic app. If you have some web service out somewhere, webhook is a very common interface to interact with them. For example, PagerDuty is a very common one that people ask us for. And then we have ITSM integration, native ITSM integration with right now Cherwell, Provence, ServiceNow, and SCCM. And this actually will pull in all of your templates and all of your infrastructure in one of those ITSM providers and let you file a ticket directly in there once one of these alerts fires with all the details that you need about this incident so that you can keep using your existing DevOps tooling and your existing ITSM tools and just kind of bring it all together and use this as a triggering mechanism. And of course, there's automation roundbooks as well, which is an Azure service that lets you do auto remediation if that's something that you want to do. So that's alerts. That's how you set them up. Let's just go back here real quick and take a look at how our Kubernetes cluster is doing. So we'll just say get pods. And sure enough, this tasks pod now is one out of one ready, running with zero restarts. So clearly, we fixed the issue that we were able to detect off of just some simple logs. Now, that's simple logs, and that's a very contrived infrastructure example. So what happens if the issue is actually in your code, like is typically the case? What if you actually need to go in and examine all of that? Well, let's take a look at that through another service that we have called Application Insights. And Application Insights is our APM offering in Azure. So let's take just a second here to pull it up. Now, I know most of you raised your hands when we talked about Application Insights, and hopefully you're using it already, but I'll be showing you a few newer features. So, okay, there it is. I'd blame the Wi-Fi, but I'm connected to Ethernet, so I'll blame my machine instead for this particular one. So here's Application Insights. And on the left-hand side, you have a whole host of different tools and features that you can use to really troubleshoot and examine your application. So we won't have time to get into all of them today, but I'll show you the most common ones that you would typically use for any sort of investigation. I'll start off with the application map. This is something that we've had for a while, but we've recently revamped to truly support sort of a microservices, containerized, that entire world where it's not just a big monolithic service that you're running. And in this case, you can see I have two instances of my application running. The one on the bottom here happens to be just some testing I was doing against the same Application Insights resource this morning. That's not relevant to us. So let's just take a look at the one above here. We can see right away that I have one hosted instance. This is my app service instance. We can see that the exception rate isn't too bad, that we had 41,000 calls to a typical response rate. We can see that we were sort of doing some calls on the host itself. And then here are my microservices on this IP address. We were doing a few calls to them. And then there's also the service profiler thing that we were calling out to. I can click on any one of these, either one of these calls or on the service itself, and I can get some insights right away. So for this one hosted insight, or one hosted instance, these were my top failures, and these were my slowest responses. And we also ran some clustering algorithms there. So yes, 100% of my failures had the same cloud role instance, which makes sense because I only have one hosted environment, so I wouldn't expect multiple ones. But then 80% of them had this result code 500 on a particular operation name. So we can drill into that. I can either press go to details here or investigate failures, or I can just go straight into the failures blade over here, which is what we'll do. And this will all take you into our failure analysis experience. So what can we do with these failure analysis? We can certainly zoom in on a particular time range. Let's say I'll just drag into here, and I can, of course, reset the time. I can compare the number of failures to a particular metric that is typically used at the same time, so either request count or CPU or memory or storage, things that typically you'd want to look at as potentially impacting the error. We can also take a look at this by either operation or a dependency call or just the raw exceptions. So let's take a look at the exceptions, and we can see that there's just really one over here. Services, customer testimonial service, et cetera. And I can actually go and look at the raw exceptions that we're capturing. So we're not capturing some pre-aggregated form or metric. We're actually capturing the raw exceptions so that you have as rich a set of data available to you as possible to go in and do these investigations. Let's pick one of these. I'll pick this one, and I'll tell you why and what that icon means in a second. But you can see here sort of the problem ID and when the exception happened. And when I click on any one of these, we are taken to this end-to-end transaction tracing experience. Now, this is a very, very basic application. It's only got two tiers. And so I'm only seeing a pretty shallow Gantt chart here. I'll show you an example in a few minutes of an application that consists of many, many services and many, many tiers and what one of these looks like there. But what we can see is that we made this call to get testimonials. Let me zoom in. To get testimonials index, which in turn is part of that call through an exception. So we're actually tracing your transaction throughout its entire life cycle, through all the services that it hits. And again, I'll show you a nicer one of these later, but at any step, I can actually drill down and see exactly what we know about that. So for this basic GET call, you know, not a whole lot. It's just a GET call, and a basic HTTP call. For the exception, give me just a second here. Live demos. Okay, there we are. Sorry, let's try that again. Okay, so here's the exception. Here's the full call stack. I can narrow this down to looking at just my code so that we comment out essentially any libraries or anything that you're using. Try to make this a little easier to understand. And of course, there's some common debugging options for you here, like show me all available telemetry for this root operation, show me all telemetry 5 minutes before and after, things like that. I can also create a work item here. So going back to that DevOps cycle, you can integrate with your Visual Studio Team Services instance or with your GitHub account, and you can actually file bugs with all of this information that we collect right against yourself so that you can really operationalize this. The other thing available to you here is this button called Open Debug Snapshot. And a debug snapshot is something that you can capture running live in production. This will be a full capture of everything about that exception, your full call stack and the full set of locals at every step in that stack. So I can click on any step, and I can see the full state of locals. So for example, here are my time variables. Here's the full exception details. And I can start drilling down and really understanding what's going on with my exception. This is really, really cool because this is coming from my production application. I didn't have to capture what the variable values were, try to go to my pre-production instance, reproduce the issue, any of that. This is coming right from my production instance. Now, something really cool that Shiva touched on that we announced recently is the ability to enable this on the fly in application services through the extension mechanism so that you no longer have to install our NuGet package even to do this. This is just out of the box. The other thing you can do is you can download a snapshot, and I won't tempt the network here. I actually downloaded this before the session. And what happens when you open this file, it'll take you right into your IDE, into Visual Studio, where your code is, and you'll be able to look at this exception right within there through the same experiences you would use through your, you know, basic step-through mechanism. So it'll take a second here. It'll ask me whether I want to look at just native, just managed, or mixed. Let's go mixed. And it will, again, pull all of that data from that exception that happened in production and show it to me right here. So we'll give it a second. And I can see that I'm now in my testimonialservice.cs. I can see here's the exception. I can add locals, just like I normally would, or exception. And, you know, drill down into that. All of that's available for me. But it looks like in this case, we simply just throw an exception for no reason once we get to this line of code. If there was some more complicated issue, of course, you'd be able to troubleshoot it because all the information's right there for you, all of your variables, everything. The other thing I'll point out here, again, to go back to that full DevOps cycle, is that we integrate with source control as well as application insights right in your IDE. So here's my source control. There was one change here done by one author, and I can go and take a look at my history. This happens to be a Git repo running in VSTS, but will, of course, integrate with any Git repository. We can also see that there's 32 live instances in production, so we're actually calling out to Application Insights. That same data that we were looking at before is available to you right here in your IDE, and I can click on it and look at all of my data right here, so I don't even have to leave my development environment to see all of this very useful data. So in this case, I think I'm done debugging, so let's just press stop. And I think what I'll do is just comment this line out, save this, and let's actually deploy the fix and see if that helps. Now, before I deploy this, let me go back and let me actually pull up another feature of Application Insights that's super useful for this type of thing. The feature I have in mind is called a live stream. And essentially what this does is instead of taking that minute or two delay that the logs typically take to get in, It will literally, in a live matter of seconds, show you the data as it's coming in, pulled from the ingestion pipeline. Why is this useful? Well, if we're doing a deployment like we are right now, sorry, we'll give it just a second here. We want to see right away whether our deployment had the effect that we wanted to or not, or whether we're still getting exceptions. And so let's just confirm that that's happening. I'll press Live Metrics stream over here. It'll actually go off and connect to my SDK, tell the SDK to start sending data at a much more frequent pace through a different channel. I won't get into the details of that, but it's actually super cool technology. So right now, this is live. We can see what's going on. So if I go back to my homepage over here, and let's just give it a refresh. We'll do another one just in case. Go back to the live metric stream. You can see we're capturing that request and that exception. So there's that customer testimonial service exception that we just saw, right? And I can even see the stack trace over here. I can, of course, filter this down if I want to look at just a few particular exceptions. But let's go ahead and deploy the fix and see what happens. Now, if you watched the keynote yesterday, I'm going to do something that Donovan very much wouldn't like me to do, which is right-click and publish. But I'll show you in a minute also how we do this in a more formal manner. So I'll press publish here, and it'll actually go off and build everything. And
well, Evgeny is pulling that up. We showed a lot of capabilities that were there before, like application map, the debugger. You haven't shown the profiler yet.
Not yet.
What we've done is really a couple of things. Make it scale to larger apps, especially distributed apps. We've done a lot of improvements. And also to streamline the workflows, like how it connects to failures and being able to narrow down to the cause of the failure. So really took a lot of feedback from customers and really tuned these to work across on larger applications.
Yeah, let's actually take a look at that in action. We'll just let that deploy in the background. What I have here is an app map pulled up for a more complex service. So I promised you I'd show you this. Here we actually have three microservices, and they're kind of all talking to each other. There's a front end, there's a couple of back ends. The back ends are talking to each other. The front end is talking to both of them. Not only that, but some of these back end services are actually captured. So for example, here's just a basic HTTP call, but here we have an Azure Event Hub call. And we know that Event Hub is an Azure service, so we capture that. Likewise here, we know that we're talking to three SQL databases and a Redis cache. And we can click on any one of these, and just like we were able to before get those insights, we can see them right from here, and it would show me all of that as well. I can also, let's take a look at that distributed transaction trace mechanism here. If we drill into one of these, let's say this one with 396 exceptions, we'll just pick any example, doesn't really matter. I want to show you how this looks when you have a true multi-tier application running. So we're back here to our end-to-end view. And you can see that we're actually going across your entire Azure deployment. We're looking not just at your current Application Insights instance. We're looking at other Application Insights instances. We're looking at other Azure services, pulling all of that data in and displaying it all for you right here. So you can see a Gantt chart. It looks like there was some retry logic that ultimately led to a failure. But beforehand, we actually called out to this inventory service, once with a get, once with a post. So maybe we're doing some communication there. And you'll also notice here there's a profiler trace. Shiva briefly mentioned the profiler trace. Just like we have the snapshot debugger, the profiler trace is used to capture performance information, again, live on your production server. And pull that in. This one doesn't seem to be working, but it's essentially the same profiler you'd find in Visual Studio, just available through the web. So what's probably happening here is these are a little old, so we probably got rid of the actual underlying profiler trace. But play around with it. There's a bunch of other sessions that cover this. I would encourage you. It's a fantastic feature. But let's go back over here. Looks like the deployment is done, or maybe there was an issue. But let's just try to reload the website. I think I might have needed to specify a return path there, and I didn't. But the website is loading, so let's go into the live metrics stream. And we can see that it's just the request coming in now. So that, or yep, there's the request. So I guess I didn't fix it, but point is, if you did fix it properly, everything would work just as well. So again, live demos. You can tell I'm a PM. I haven't touched code in a while, right? Let's take a look at release management proper. Again, towards that DevOps cycle. So we integrate with Visual Studio Team Services. We talked about a few places where that exists already, but I really want to talk about this piece. When you have a true continuous deployment pipeline set up, there's a few things you can do to integrate with all of these great application insight services that I've been talking about so far. So this is my pipeline. It's very simple. It just looks for a cloud build coming off of one of our builds there in that GitHub repo that, or in that Git repo on VS that I have. I have continuous deployment turned on. So anytime a new build drops, this deployment step kicks off. And I only have one environment. Of course, I can have multiple ones. And it's got a few different tasks to it. The first one, because I'm hosted on App Services, I can actually enable Application Insights without even installing the NuGet package. So this activity here, and it's, of course, available for you both out of the release part as well as the build part if you don't implement a true release pipeline yet. It lets me say, hey, enable Application Insights on this service. Then I actually want to configure some of those alerts we talked about right by default in here. So I'm configuring four alert rules, one of an availability, another on failed requests, server exceptions, things like that. Then we're actually doing the deployment, you know, the meat of this. And finally, we're adding a release annotation. And I'll show you in just a second here what release annotations look like. So essentially, we're saying we want a marker in our telemetry that says, there was a release that happened. Here's the build version. Here's all of that, so that you can commonly go back and see, you know, when the failure started spiking, what build led to it. So now that we talked about this, let's go back to Application Insights over here and take a look at just a couple of more things. So if we go back to the application map here, or actually, let's go back over here to our application, not this other one. Sorry, Live Metric Streams, too many tabs. I want to also show you kind of the perf experience. We touched on it a little bit through the performance profiler, but there's also a full-fledged performance experience so that you capture everything, not just those selective captures. Looks very much similar to what you see with failures. You know, here we've got our performance, here we've got request count, CPU memory storage. I can filter it down to just a particular operation. I can also look at dependency calls so that if you have an issue with one of your dependencies, you can go back and look at those. For example, looks like I'm having some really long calls to this custom path. Again, we'll try to provide you insights out of the box. So 75% of the time, it looks like we were running on that role name and role instance, and a further 25% of the time, those were the common parameters. So we also have this experience available for you. Now, the last piece I want to show you in Application Insights, of just because of time constraints, is this users section. So turns out that all of this APM data isn't just useful for examining your performance and your failures and all of that. It's also your business telemetry. It's how many people are coming in and using your service. It's the, you know, parameters of those people. What country are they from? What browsers are they on? All of that. So we took all of that data that we already had available, and we actually built these usage tools on top of them. And you can see we have users, sessions, events, funnels, flows, retention, all sorts of things. I'll just show you one of them today, which is users. This is one of the simpler ones. You can define cohorts, for example, people in North America using Chrome on, I don't know, pick your operating system of choice. You can break things down that way. So these are my users. Here's their profile. So here's their country. Here's the OS they're coming from. Looks like someone's using Windows Phone. Awesome, I didn't build the app for Windows Phone, but great to see people are doing it. Here's some more insights. Looks like people are coming in from Android as well. I can split this by any dimension that I provide in my telemetry. And of course, all the telemetry is customizable. So you can add as many dimensions or as many custom events in there as you want to track this. But let's say I want to break this down by city. So here's the data broken down by city. And again, all of this is live data, right? This is just your log data being presented from a usage point of view. And at any point, I can go back and I can press this analytics button over here and actually see the raw query behind this. I'll do that in a second, but I do want to show you something first. Let's just clear out that filter. You'll notice that we have the session event buttons, things like that. If I drill through, it'll take me to the appropriate place. But there's often a common path that you go through with these investigations, be they a performance or failure investigation or a usage investigation like this. And so often you want to capture these in a workbook, if you will. So there's a feature called workbooks, TSGs, if you will, if you're coming from the operations world. And these workbooks will actually let you put together a bunch of different pieces from application insights and from other monitoring services that we have to build something that you can keep coming back to for a particular investigation path. Now, these are parameterizable, so you can say, I want to look at these dimensions and expose them as parameters. You can have charts in here, you can have markdown, you can have all sorts of things. And then you can share these, publish a link, share them with your team, maybe include them in your alerts. If you know a particular alert requires a particular investigation path, you can actually point them right here and say, here's live data, here's some telemetry based off of which you can go. So that's workbooks. So let's actually go, I've kind of been teasing it for a little bit. Let's go and talk about the query language and the whole analytics pipeline that we have. So let's go back to users. And I'll actually start with this query just to show you what that looks like. You'll see this button all over Application Insights and our other services. This just takes you into analytics. So we'll give it a second to load. And again, like I said, the query that was actually used to execute or to populate that chart will be shown to us. So in this case, you can see we're doing a union across page views and custom events, things that you probably don't know yet. But ultimately, at the end of the day, here's the exact same chart we were looking at. So let's talk a little bit about this analytics platform. And to do that, I'll actually switch over into another tab, which is our demo instance of Application Insights Analytics. So what we did is, for you to learn the language and to start experimenting with all of this, we stood up an instance of Application Insights Analytics that anyone can come into. You don't have to even log in. And we have a bunch of data there pre-populated for you, so you can start playing around with these queries, learning the language, and really getting into it. So the URL is analytics.applicationinsights.io/demo. It's linked off of our docs. Our docs, by the way, too, is something that we're very proud of, but I don't have time to get into that too much. So let's open up a new tab here. And if you want, you can follow along, those of you with laptops or on the recording. We've got some getting started queries here for you. I'll close out of there now. I'll just kind of talk you through some queries. So on the left are the tables that are available to you. For Application Insights, these are traces, custom events, page views, requests, failures, exceptions, all those things that we've been looking at so far. How do we actually query them? Let's minimize the schema here, and we'll write some queries together. The simplest thing that you probably will want to do is look for a particular keyword. Maybe you want to see everything about a particular machine name or something about a particular exception type. But I'll just say search, and then in quotes, type in error, something very simple. Now, I can press this run button over here or press shift enter on my keyboard. If you're coming from SQL, of course, the shortcut there is F5. F5 tends to do not good things in the browser in the context of writing queries, so shift enter it is. So we'll give it just a second. By default, we'll limit you to 10,000 results as your final result set. Your intermediate result set, so if you're doing aggregations and stuff, can be as big as you want. In fact, if you come see me at the booth, I'll show you some demos over, you know, billions, literally billions of records. But ultimately, you know, you're probably not going to scroll through billions of raw record events. So we limit you to 10,000 rows. And so here we can see that we have the word error in availability results and probably a bunch of other tables. And I can scroll through these. I can also expand any row and see things in a sort of pivoted out way. Data platform, you'll notice, supports JSON as a first class citizen. So custom dimensions over here is actually a JSON field. I can expand into it. I can also use the dot notation in my queries to reference it. But, you know, this is sort of a very brute force approach to writing these queries. Typically, you kind of know what you're looking for a little better. And so let's actually work on that. So the thing I want to do is look at page views. So we'll start by typing in page views. And you'll notice IntelliSense pops up here and actually says, hey, we know that there's a table called page views. I'll press tab to log that in. And it automatically inserts the pipe for me. So this is a pipe through type of language. So if you've ever used PowerShell or any other type of shell, unlike SQL, you kind of just build up on your query. You don't write it all at once like you would with SQL or something like that. This is much more intuitive. And really, you build up on your query as you would with an investigation. You don't always go right to the end. You kind of do some filtering, maybe some aggregation, and ultimately end up where you need to. But anyway, we have this page views table, and it knows now we can do a where, which is a filter, or an extend, or a join. Let's just do something very basic, which is take 10. Let's just see 10 rows. I want to see what kind of data there is in the page views table. I don't really care about the data itself. So here we are in the page views table. And here's what it looks like. We're capturing, let's expand it again, the time, the operation name, that transaction, distributed transaction tracing thing. These are all the internal GUIDs that are used to build all of that together. Here's my browser. So I kind of know what the data looks like. So maybe I only want to take a look at the home page here. That seems to be common. So let's actually do, again, page views. And I'll say where in this case. Now it knows that the page views has these columns. So I'll just type in name. And it knows that name is a string. So here's all the different string operators you can have. And I'm really emphasizing this autocomplete point because this is so useful for learning the language and for really having it as a crutch to build these queries in a very fast manner. We ourselves rely on it all the time. You'll know that I just keep pressing tab a few characters, tab a few characters. It's something that we think we really have an edge over comparable solutions where we really, really make it easier on you. But
how many of you actually use this language today? Okay, it's a good number of you.
Good.
Not quite a few. So recently, beginning of this year, we also announced moving the Azure Log Analytics and OMS to the same platform. So you can use the same query language across all your operational data as well. We also announced how you can join across multiple App Insights instances. Also join across your OMS data and your App Insights data, so really being able to get a broader view. So you'll see us putting more and more effort into bringing this experience together across all your data, operational data and application data.
Right, and this is super useful. If you remember when we were doing the containers piece, I showed you just one query. That's actually coming from Log Analytics, so I can correlate that container infrastructure data and those STD out logs to my application data across the role instance name, common key, and figure out what the issues were. Azure Security Center uses the same data platform. A bunch of other services are using it or are pending to use it. So really, that slide that Shiva had about all your data being in the same place, you really do mean it. And for your investigation purposes, we think that that's a really, really powerful thing. But let's keep going here. So we have our home page. OK, so we're looking at some data. You'll probably want to do some aggregations. And for those of you who know the language, I'm starting a little slow, but this is one of the most common pieces of feedback we get as to how to get started with the query language. So I do want to spend a few minutes here. So summarize is where all your aggregations live, from any to averages to counts to minimum, maximum, percentiles, all of that. We'll just do the simplest thing possible, which is to summarize the count. So over the last 24 hours, we've had 20,000 page views. And then I can keep going. You'll notice I'm copying, pasting things. So maybe I want to break this down by name. All I have to do is say, break this down by name. And I will actually see this broken down by each of the pages that I have and the count for each of those pages. You can also group by multiple dimensions. And one of the most common dimensions that you might want to group by is a time axis. So how did these counts change over time? And for that, you can use something called bin. Almost every query that you do will have this. This is your trending piece. So what I'll say is I want to trend over my timestamp. And I want my buckets to be, let's say, hourly. And for that, there is a very simple syntax shortcut, which is 1H. And so I'll press that, and now we have a timestamp field. The other really cool thing about this analytics platform is as you're doing your investigations and your drill downs, you have charting available right from within the data platform. So you don't have to pull all this data out into Excel and convert it into a table and do all of that jazz. It's all available for you right here. So I'll press chart, and here it is. Or maybe I want to look at this as a line chart instead. So let's just close out of here. All of that's available for you right from within the browser. So this is super useful because, I mean, you know, raw data at some point gets overwhelming. We want to look for these trends. A spike is much, much easier to see here as opposed to scrolling through a giant table. So very, very useful capability, and I encourage you to use it. Another very common thing that you can do is a distinct. So we maybe want to see what are all the different cities that traffic is coming into. So I can say distinct, and I can say client city. We'll execute that, and here's all the different cities where traffic is coming from. Now, just because these queries are going to get a little bit longer, I'm going to switch into another tab, and we'll actually look at some pre-canned ones. Here's just building on that. If you notice over here, there's a few cities. There's Bothell, there's Kirkland. I happen to know that all of these are actually the greater Seattle area, so I want to group them into a Seattle group. How do we do that? Well, I'm using an extend statement. An extend is essentially a column that you calculate just for the runtime of this particular query. So what I'm saying is create a new column called group Seattle, and then assign the value to it defined by this statement. In this case, if the client city is in Kirkland, Bothell, or Seattle, then the value for this column will be Seattle. Otherwise, just put the original client city in there. And I can execute just these first two lines. Very useful tip, by the way. If you highlight just the subsection, it'll execute just that. And let's just make sure that we're showing that column. So there's group Seattle, and for everything that was previously one of those previous cities, we're now showing Seattle. And now I can actually group by that, plot that instead, so that my data is much more legible towards what I'm trying to get out of it.
This is very useful, we find, with log and telemetry data, because when developers do their tracing or create the logs, don't often think about, you know, schematizing it. They just emit the data, emit the trace statements or log statements, and then later on, as you're looking at it, you want the flexibility to go create structure out of less structured data to look at create charts like this.
Yeah. Right. One bonus feature I'll show you, I wasn't actually intending to demo this, but since it's here, I kind of want to show it to you because it's super cool. You notice these pulsating purple dots in a few places. So we actually have machine learning capabilities running behind the scenes and analyzing your queries as you run them. And what they do is they look for interesting points on your data series. They'll look for dips, spikes, valleys, slow rises, slow falls, things like that. And they'll actually point them out to you and try to categorize what the reason for those interesting points is. So for example, here, you know, we've got this purple line, which is the Seattle data line. And then we've got a big fall in it. So I might want to analyze why that is. So let's just zoom in a little, and I'll try to... Resolution isn't cooperating with me here. If that point doesn't work, I'll just, you know what, let's try this point. So what we'll actually do behind the scenes, come on, you can do it. Let me just try to refresh that. Sorry, guys, this is what happens when you do unrehearsed demos. All right, well, it doesn't want to cooperate with me, the browser doesn't, but what happens is we'll run clustering algorithms behind the scenes for you, and we'll actually...
Click over.
It's okay, come see me afterwards, I promise you this works. But what we'll do is we'll run some clustering algorithms, and we'll actually pull together the data and show you a comparison of the pattern that we found, and sort of the number of entries with the pattern and without the pattern. So we'll pull the pattern out of the total data series, and we'll try and categorize what's happening. But let's get back to our scripted schedule. And I'll just show you a few useful queries that have come from the field that our customers have put together. This is a super common one. I want to look at my requests, and I want to see how they compare to my SLA. So what I'll do is I'll define a few columns, one called SLA met, which says that if the duration is less than 3 seconds, SLA breached if it's over 3 seconds. And then I'll essentially provide an index, a percentage based off of that. I'll say that my SLA is actually 99%, and then I'll just plot a time chart based off of this. So the point here is that you can start implementing your own business logic as part of these queries. Start writing alerts against things that are relevant to you. For example, this completely arbitrary definition of an SLA being over 3 seconds response time. So you can do all of that, take this back into your alerts, plug the query into an alert, maybe file an ITSM ticket against yourself anytime the SLA is breached. We also have, to go back to those machine learning capabilities I was talking about, we try to have the curated experiences, but we also expose the underlying algorithms for you. So for example here, if I'm looking at the traces, let's just plot this, maybe as a line chart. These are my traces over a particular time period, and you can see sort of there was a spike in there. How do we detect these spikes? So you can run a somewhat complex query, but not that complex. We're just doing some regression analysis and eventually categorizing it by spike detected or no match. And in this case, it returns spike detected. So the idea here is, again, I'm not trying to teach you these advanced capabilities in the query language. We have tons of resources available for you to do that, but to show you just the capabilities that are available, something that you can strive towards. And this isn't that many lines, right? We talked about pretty much every single one of these operators already. Finally, I'll show you another machine learning algorithm. This is called series outliers, and the blue data series here is the original data series, in this case, the average duration of my requests. The green line is essentially the probability that any point on the original line is an outlier. So anytime you see a spike, the higher the spike, the more likely the original line at that point in time is an outlier. So when we have this large spike, we have a big spike here, but over here it's kind of noise, and so that's pretty much flat. So if you set a threshold on this green line, another great way for you to alert based off of a custom metric now, to try and figure out any anomalies that are going on. So this is just a quick deep dive into the query language. We have, like I said, a ton of resources. There's actually a Pluralsight course coming for this in just a month or two that'll be free to everyone. So that'll be 3 or 4 hours of content. Very much encourage you to check that out once it goes live. The other thing that you can do with these queries, I'll just switch back into my other one here, is you'll notice anytime you have a chart, you have this little button here called Pin to Azure Dashboards. So if you remember in Azure, we have these dashboards available for you. I'll just go back to the home page. And you can pin anything from all over Azure, including these analytics parts. So for example, here I have some data pinned from Application Insights. And here's some analytics charts. So a couple of new things that are coming in just the next few weeks, again, private preview today. You asked us for resizable tiles. These tiles are now resizable. The other thing that you asked us for is the ability to edit these queries and other parts in line without having to unpin them, go into the query editor, all of that. There's now an edit button here that will let you do just that. It will pop up a little blade from the side there. You can edit your query, press save, and everything will be updated. So just a couple of new things that are coming pretty soon.
You can also pin it to a Power BI dashboard. So.
Yes.
And we'll soon have Grafana as well.
Yeah. So we try to integrate with sort of wherever your data is in your operational end-to-end workflow. So I think that's pretty much what I wanted to do. So let's switch over back to the demo or to the PowerPoint. We'll wrap up, and then I think we might even have some time for some questions.
So why Azure Monitoring? Where are we headed? What is special about the work we're doing, especially in the context of Azure? We are really focusing on what Evgeny showed, the last part around the query platform and the language. This was really proven at first party or in own internal use. Pretty much every Microsoft team internally used it. We saw the value of it, and that's why we brought it to Application Insights and then later on to log analytics. So similarly, whatever we find that's actually useful amongst Azure teams, Office, Windows, across the whole spectrum, we're going to bring all those capabilities to our third-party offerings. So that way we have a lot of confidence. This actually works. We've used it, and really that. And you'll see us integrating tighter and tighter into Azure itself. So bringing all the Azure telemetry, as rich information, applying intelligence on top of that information, and providing the insights. So that's an area we're going to emphasize a lot and focus on. Next is, Windows on .NET, we have pretty good support today. But we realize we need to have a broader, the world isn't all Windows and .NET. We clearly recognize that. And more emphasis around Linux, Java, and the broader ecosystem. You'll see us supporting more and more in those areas. Analytics, we're going to continue to put more fuel into that. That's where we hear constantly our customers asking for more things, talk about the value they get. They're sharing the stories, and what they're able to do, otherwise they weren't able to do previously. So you'll see us adding more and more capabilities, especially in more of the advanced algorithmic capabilities. It's not just about having a lot of data and running your own queries. It's being able to allow you to extract that insight more easily. So giving those more powerful algorithmic capabilities. And lastly, we showed a lot of integrations from Visual Studio to VSTS, Git. Git we didn't show you, but it's the same, similar to what we showed with VSTS. ITSM tools will drive more openness, open the SDKs, also connect to more and more third-party tools out of the box, like PagerDuty, Slack, and so on and so forth. So these are all areas we're going to continue investing, and we'll be the best for Azure. If we're building on hybrid on Microsoft platform or on Azure, we'll have the best monitoring capabilities. That's the reason why you should look at our monitoring offerings. In 2018, what are some of the areas we are going to, rest of the year, focus on? First is really, we have a lot of broad set of capabilities. Evgeny showed a lot of different things, right? We want to bring those together more cohesively. Look at the key workflows and tie together the various pieces so you get that full stack monitoring. So when you find an issue with your business KPI or SLA, we're able to go and diagnose the issue. Detect and diagnose the issue very fast. It could be in your application code, it could be in the infrastructure, or it could be somewhere lower in the stack, like network. Being able to connect those dots more easily is an area where we're going to emphasize a lot and put more effort. Next, I've already talked about better improving the support for Linux and Java and other languages. Some of those are listed there. Alerting, Evgeny showed some algorithmic capabilities to group alerts. Having one alert experience across all your data and different types of data as well. That we're going to continue on that front, could really complete that out. I talked about bringing more intelligence across the board, right? Giving you that insight more quickly. And lastly, this is another area where we hear constantly, especially from existing customers who are using our products, they want to move to more regions. Whether it's governments or to China, Germany, Europe, you'll see us expanding that capability across. So these are all the areas of focus for 2018. Any questions? Can you say the last?
So, folks, just to cut in real quick, further questions, if you could use the mic just for the recording. But for now, we can keep going.
We have a synchronous pattern where our web API puts message into the queue and then it picked up by processing.
Yeah.
Can it be seen as, in terms of end-to-end transaction, a single transaction, the processing? of that message.
Exactly, that's the idea. Now, do we have support for every technology in Azure that can propagate the transaction? No, so we're adding support across the various pieces. So the intent is to get you, enable you to get that full view. Queues, Azure Queues should be coming soon.
Yep.
Right? Event Hub and Azure Queues should be coming fairly soon.
Specifically, we have it in Service Bus.
Service Bus as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all technologies we're looking at.
So, but it's not available now.
It's not available.
You'll just see it as a call to a Service Bus, but you won't actually see the message come through it.
Yes.
So that's what's coming soon is what Shiva is alluding
okay.
to.
Okay, right. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and as you folks are leaving, thank you all. Just we kind of informally ended, but please keep going with the questions.
So are those logs in Kubernetes, the STD out, STDR, being pushed to Log Analytics, or are they being queried somehow directly from Kubernetes?
No, so there, I mean, essentially what's happening behind the scenes in AKS when you enable that monitoring capability is we'll install the agent for you automatically, and the agent will push the logs up. So it is just, you know, agent-based push of the logs into Log Analytics.
Okay, thanks.
It is, yeah. So you can manually install it too if you really wanted to, but why?
Can you just talk a little bit about the difference between the application map and the service map?
Sure, you want to take that?
So that's an area we're looking at as well. So you'll see us have a common mapping, basically, surface. Right? It may be multiple surfaces, but it'll be a common technology, and you'll be able to drill in from your web app or whatever component you have into your look at your VMs and your infrastructure. That's what I talked about in a previously full stack. That's one of the areas you'll see us investing. So really, you can go down the layers deeper and deeper.
Yeah, but as far as today, just to add to that, the application map is really your application's point of view, right? You get a bit of infrastructure there, but it's really agnostic to that. Whereas the service map is very much about your infrastructure, right? So that's more network-based, that's more agent-based. So if you want to look at the infrastructure layer, service map is tailored to that. If you want to look at the application layer, that's your application map.
Yeah, so my question is about how to get the data from our application there. So we have a Win32 server application not using .NET, and I'd like to get, for instance, those incoming user requests, and I'd like to get some custom metrics out there, so into that service. So what should I do?
Have you looked at our SDKs?
To an extent that I've basically seen, for instance, that there is no native Win32 C++ SDK, but you could use the REST API. So
yeah, there's a community-supported one, but that's kind of it.
Yeah, you have to use a REST endpoint, send your custom metrics to our the examples on how to do that, samples.
It's not out of the box. We realize that, but we kind of have to prioritize.
Do you still think that application insights and log analytics is for this kind of applications too? It's just maybe a bit more work to get the data out there, but it would be worth doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, you need to use something for your logging telemetry, right? And we believe we have the best platform out there for that between, you know, the queries that I showed you and everything else and the investigation capabilities. Like, all of that still stays.
Yeah. Right? How about if a lot of that data would be coming from on-premises?
As long as you can access the endpoint, perfectly fine. So you can even set up a proxy. All of our IPs and everything are published and ports, so you can figure out.
All right. Finally, we actually write a lot of that kind of metrics data into event tracing for Windows. So is there any path from event tracing for Windows, ETW data into this?
There is. It's a little not straightforward, but you can get the data into Log Analytics through a few different things, through event flow, essentially.
Yeah, why don't you follow up with us afterwards? All we right. can follow, point you to a sample, once you get a sample on how to do that.
So I'm not an expert in this space, but there's application insights and then OMS, and I see that from blog that there's a plugin that you can send application insight data to OMS, and then we were seeing things today. Is this something different than those things?
You don't have to use the connector. what we used to have, the connector that was announced a year and a half ago.
Okay.
That's a point I've quickly made. So today, with what Evgeny showed, he didn't show the actual query. You can connect, take data from an application insights app, as we call it, and join that data with the OMS workspace.
Okay.
Just right, in through the query itself.
So you don't have to copy the data over and...
Yeah, you don't want to be paying for the double ingest and all of that, right?
So you would still enable the application insights through your application, and then you would ingest it through there. You wouldn't get application insights by using the OMS.
No. They're different, right? OMS and Log Analytics, really, OMS, that branding's kind of going away. But that's agent-based. That's more of your infrastructure layer today. Application Insights is entirely SDK-based, lives in your application. So they're just different pivots on the same data. Now, you'll see more and more, as Shiva talked about, them coming together. But
it's the same platform underneath. We're converging the platform.
Right.
So you'll be able to look at it as one data repository on which you can query. So the disconnect that was there between different products, it's all going away. The walls are breaking.
Okay.
Right? So you can look at all the data from one place.
Right.
Right? And you can already do this. We announced this about 6 months ago.
Yeah, and feel free to drop by the booth. I'll show you
some examples.
Okay, great.
I'm there tomorrow morning. By the way, can we get a thumbs up that we're still okay to be here for a little while? I don't know if you guys have a cutoff, in which case we can just go outside and take the questions. They're deciding, so let's do another question for now.
We see the query editor, so I can do the queries. Is there a way that I can consume those queries in my app, actually consume the graph that gets out of those queries in my specific app, a web app, for instance?
Yeah, you can have a, certainly yes. You can have a, invoke the query from your own logic, right? And it could be a function, could be logic app, for example, and you can...
In my visual interface.
So we don't expose the graphing libraries. That's sort of an implementation details. But what you can do is, for example, depending where you want to use it. So in Flow logic apps, we have an activity there called Run Application Insights Query and Visualize Results. And so that'll actually generate the JPEG for you or a PNG. I forget what it is.
And then I could embed that image.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, something like that. But we don't really emphasize the graphing part of it. We, like Shiva mentioned, delegate to things like the dashboard, Power BI.
So today, if I want to consume that data, I have to go through the apps that...
There is an API, but the API returns the data in its raw form. It doesn't return a graphed version of it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
One more question, and then we'll step outside and take the rest of them.
Is there any general best practices guidance in terms of all of my environments going into one workspace, or I should partition by QA, prod, XYZ? And then also a question around best practices, again, of the structure of my logs. Would you be recommending the stuff that comes out of our apps itself is already JSON, or is there some other guidance? And if there's something online, just point us to it.
The first question, it's a long topic, because it depends on how complex your environment is and how you want to, it goes into a number of questions.
Compliance, RBAC.
Your organizational requirements, and so on and so forth. So we can take that offline.
Okay.
For the second part, JSON works fine. This is designed for JSON.
But it'll automatically feed it
in as JSON is
structured data.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what it'll do is it'll flatten the first layer of JSON, and then everything else will get stored as a JSON blob that you can then dereference in the query language.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Yep,